What's going on? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and on the phone line is the one and only Tino Cuccino. He is on the show. What's going on, bro?
What's happening? How is life, man? How are you?
I am doing great, bro. First things first, I wanted to ask you, and I'll ask you about you, but I wanted to get some advice right up front. So I'm a little similar to you where I work in radio. I have a podcast. Very soon I'm going to be premiering an online show through the No Filter Network. But a lot of people, Tino, tell me, like BJ Shea out in Seattle, they're like, we don't really know what you do. Eric Nagel from Opie and Anthony said this because, like, I post so much on social media. For you, you do a lot of things. You have a syndicated show. You're based out of Phoenix. You got music. You interview artists. You got the show on Complex. How do you organize everything so that you post enough, but you let people know what you're doing? What's the key to making your brand the best?
I feel like when it comes to just posting, you know, that's kind of like for us, our biggest social platform 100% is Instagram. So that's where any and everybody coming for anything, Tino Cuccino, that's where they're going to find it. So we kind of know that. And so we just throw it all there. Like, that's the focus. Obviously you have Twitter, you mentioned the Complex show, which I'm on Twitch. Yes, but I'll still take clips from that and repurpose it and go to our Instagram. I think it's okay to have your hand in a little bit of everything, because who wants to just focus on one thing and just, you know, be bored with it? Everybody wants to do other things. You see Jay-Z investing in cannabis companies and all kinds of stuff. He has trillions of dollars, it feels like, but he keeps reinventing himself and jumping in other things. That's a healthy thing to do. But I think it's just finding that one place where you know you can, you know, put it out there for everybody to kind of consume it all in the same place. Instead of that, what I'm trying to say is you can be everywhere, but you still need to have that one platform where everyone can come back to it and kind of understand what you're doing and where to find it. And for us, you know, everything we do, whether it's the radio show, whether it's the Complex show, whether it's podcasting, it's all going to come back to our Instagram and kind of just live in that hub for everybody to find it, for anyone that, you know, cares about what we're doing.
What is your take on Facebook now for creators? Because, man, when it first premiered, Facebook Live, I would get like 1,000 views within 6 hours on my live podcast. And now I'll do a Facebook Live and it doesn't show up on a feed and it might get 4 views. So I don't know if you've noticed this recently, but it just seems like they're hiding things with their algorithms.
You know, it's crazy. I mean, like I said, on Facebook, we don't utilize it probably as much as we should, to be honest. I mean, I can admit that. But I mean, I noticed the same problem, obviously, on Instagram. They're the same company. You know, some weeks our stuff will be popping and the views are coming in. The comment engagement is there. And we're like, wow, all right, it's clicking. Hell yeah, clicking. And then the next week, everything will be down by half. And it's like, what's happening? I wish I had a real answer for you. I mean, I definitely think that, you know, the algorithm, I feel like they're constantly changing it to try and cater to individuals. So I really think it depends on the audience. If I had to have any type of educated guess, I guess it would just kind of depend on the audience and what their habits are for the week. You know, these phones are literally tracking our websites we're going to and what we like and what we fast forward through, and it takes these notes. So it's really just kind of dependent on the audience and the connection, I think, that you're, you know, building with them, and kind of, I guess, with the company too. I do wonder sometimes if maybe they take like a month and their focus is Facebook and let's try and slow down Instagram to push more people to Facebook, or vice versa. I don't know. I wish I had a better answer, but I'm kind of wondering the same thing myself at times.
What do you do to turn off social media when you're done with your job? Because for me, all my social media is combined, so it's radio and personal life. I don't post that much about my personal life, but it's not like there's another account I can go to where I don't get comments about radio shows I produce on a weekend or my podcast. So how do you turn it off when you get home, or do you find yourself sort of laying in bed refreshing it?
I mean, I'll be honest, I don't turn it off. I really don't. I kind of live and breathe this, and I'm glad that my fiance is understanding of it. It's kind of, it's what I tell my team and what I've told previous cast members on the show and stuff like that. This is just kind of a different situation into where not just myself, but everyone that's involved with this, you got to live it. You got to breathe it. You know, we're a very transparent type of show and type of brand as to where whatever we're going through in our personal life, we're going to talk about it on the air. The good, the bad, it doesn't matter. I mean, literally 2 days ago, we talked about my producer, Matt, wanted to take a day off for a funeral, but it wasn't a close family member. It was like a friend from, you know, 6-7 years ago. We talked about it on the air and how I was kind of hesitant to let him off because it wasn't family, but, you know, I'm his friend, so I wanted him to do it. And this listener reached out, and she was so upset because I was exploiting him and his situation for content, and she just didn't understand that's what we do. Like, literally, we have this app that we all use on the day-to-day, and anything that makes us feel any type of way, whether it's happy, sad, mad, if we feel any type of emotional reaction, we'll post it in this app. And only the four of us on the show can see it, but then we later sit down and go over each topic and figure out ways to implement it into the show. So my point is, I am one of the few, I feel, and my team that does not turn it off. And I feel like that's what makes for the best content.
Now, how often are you working? Because you'll hear about like Ryan Seacrest doing TV shows, and back in the 90s, you had Tom Joyner going from Dallas to Chicago. You got so much going on. Are you working all the time, or are you able to find like free time to hang out with your fiance or play video games or watch sports?
Weekends now are kind of the off time, which is cool. Well, I guess it has been. Now I'm kind of starting to get back into the DJ gig side of things. I had my first gig, you know, post pandemic coming up this weekend, actually. But for the most part, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. You know, at one point we were doing our show live in Phoenix, and then we'd get on a plane immediately after, fly to Portland, and then do our show live from there. And we did that for maybe 6 months because, you know, we were just starting the syndication and we really wanted to brand ourselves in Portland. And that was a really cool experience. I don't know. It's one of them things, you know, I guess my only real time to escape it is when I'm in the gym. I mean, I feel like that's the one time that I can kind of turn it off in my head and focus on something else. But other than that, I feel like I'm just wired that way. Like, whatever situation I'm in, I'll see something and I'll analyze it. Like, ooh, that could be a bit, or that could be a topic, or this would be great, or this co-host would relate to this, or whatever, whatever. It's really hard to turn it off, but I guess the gym and somewhat on weekends, maybe Sundays. It's kind of like my day to just hang out.
I noticed for me, I don't go to the gym as much as I have been in the past year. Like, I'll have these weird parts of the month where I go five times a week, and then I won't go for like 8 days. So I'm kind of on that point right now because I've had a lot going on. But I will say, right, Tino, the days that and the weeks that I do go very often and I work out with my trainer and my friend, the three of us, is when I have the best content on social media. I feel the best, and then I'm the best at work is when I don't feel sluggish. So I definitely think even if it's just 45 minutes to an hour at the gym, that is so necessary for the mental health of somebody in radio, where radio is just so competitive and crazy.
Oh, yeah. You just have to find a way to, you know, take that energy, even frustration or whatever, and put it into something. Like right now, I'm talking to you and I'm on the treadmill. Like, you just got to find a way to, you know, to kind of mix it together and balance it. But I definitely think it's super important to get some type of, you know, really good workout or exercise in and kind of just clear your head from the madness that is radio.
So you hear a lot about syndication over the years. Howard began it, and then you hear people complain about it. And the people that complain about it are the ones that fail at it. And then you hear the people that do well at it, like Woody or you. You guys hear people like you, Woody, Elvis Duran, the people that do well at it say it's great. Now, the thing I like about the way you do syndication is when I've listened, it doesn't sound like a show that's just mailing it in, because a lot of syndicated shows, especially voice tracking, it just doesn't sound good. So what is your key to make it sound the best for each market that you're in?
For the most part, I mean, my biggest thing I hate, and a few markets have done it, you know, they try and do the thing where you say the station and they'll pre-produce it to try and match the breaks that you send in, and the inflection never matches, and that sounds like crap. To be honest, like, I think our biggest thing is just that we're not really just introing songs, you know. Like I said, we're a very transparent show. We're talking about us. We're talking about, you know, the listeners. Usually we have like 6 or 7 breaks an hour, and 4 or 5 of those breaks have listeners. So these listeners know that they can listen to the show and be a part of it. They can reach out. And I think just, you know, we're just a demo. Like, what the listeners are listening to, we're listening to. We're talking about. What they're watching, we're watching. What they're going through in life, we're going through. So it's just really relatable. And for the most part, I think that's what's going to keep them tuning in versus us saying the station name. They could really, you know, they could care less, man. At the end of the day, they're not even really tuning in. In my opinion, a majority of people are not tuning in for the music anymore, because the music, I mean, you know, you can go anywhere for it, anywhere, any given time. There's no need to make a request, but you can pull out your phone and instantly listen to it. So the goal now is to, yes, play the music that they're familiar with, maybe put them on game with some new music. But the most important thing is what's happening in between the music. And as long as that's relatable and you can evoke emotion, I think you're going to win.
It was really bizarre. So I'm a diehard fan of Nas. Like, he's been one of my favorite rappers my whole life. And you know when, like, you're friends with somebody on social media, on IG, and they'll post a comment, it's the first thing you see on the bottom? I saw, like, a few weeks ago that you commented on one of Nas's posts that one of his CDs, you got it like a radio giveaway. And for some reason, I just remember that because, like, I have a good memory of seeing things. And it's crazy how, like, back then, that was the only way you would have been able to hear Nas. But now, since he's one of my favorite artists, whenever he releases a new album, I get that notification to Spotify. I just find that fascinating that, like, 15, 20, 25 years ago, you only were able to listen to Nas or Biggie or whatever, or even Alanis Morissette through a CD, but now you can literally sign up for Spotify and it's right there.
I mean, it's so crazy. You know, I remember, you know, I got in radio really young. I was like interning when I was 13. I remember being 12, 13 years old and having a cassette tape, and I would want to record my favorite songs. I would sit in front of the radio with the tape in on pause, ready to go. And as soon as I heard that first beat drop, I knew if it was my song or not. I would unpause it and record the whole song. And if you tune in a minute too late, you miss half of the song, you had to wait another hour, 2 hours before you heard it again. I remember doing that. And it's so funny to think, I mean, yeah, you're right. Now, if you want to hear anything, you know, you just pull it up and, hey, let's listen to Blink-182. Let's listen to MGK. Let's listen to, you know, whatever right now. It's so crazy that it's just so accessible.
Do you keep any of the old tapes that you used? Because I'm from Chicago, so back in the 90s through like 2010, they had the B96 After Party, which was like the greatest, the greatest hip hop mix show I've ever heard. Like DJ Boogie Boy, and then they would have EDM guys like Josh the Funky One. And my mom like recently sent me a picture. She was like, "Do you know what these tapes are?" And I had like over 25 cassettes, bro, of all these old mixes from like 06. And I've been playing it recently, and it doesn't sound great because it was like FM radio and it was in my room. But bro, like, there's something really special about like, and it might be because I'm a radio geek and you're a radio geek too, but there's something special about when you put that cassette in the player and you play it and it has that like FM radio sound from years ago.
I mean, that sounds amazing. I wish I had some of that. I had a ton of it. And it's funny you say B96. I used to listen to like DJ Spin and a bunch of guys
out there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I was a huge fan, and I would have these recordings too because I was a mix show junkie. I mean, before I talked on the radio, I was a mixer. I learned how to mix from my buddy DJ Scooby, who used to be in Albuquerque at KKSS, and he moved around a lot. He's in Texas now, but he had taught me how to DJ. So I was doing that before. So mix shows, I mean, I was so just addicted to it. I love listening to the different intros and transitions, and I would record so many tapes. And in a move I made from my hometown of Lubbock to San Antonio, I lost everything. Like, one of the boxes didn't show up on the truck, and it was the one that had all of my tapes and recording. So that's cool that you still have some. I don't have any of that.
Yeah, it's crazy, bro. And then you hear all these songs. Like, there's one song I listen to now when I work out. It's this song by Mims called Winter's My Summer, and it has like 200 listens on Spotify, and it's some song that never caught on. And I think it was after This Is Why I'm Hot, and he was trying to, and it's weird when you listen to those old mix shows that you'll hear like these songs that never really took off. And some of those songs, bro, from like 15 years ago, like the songs that weren't popular are some of the best songs.
I remember, like, I mean, I was part of a ton of like record clubs, and so they would send, you know, singles and EPs and whatever out at the time, but all on vinyl. And I remember a ton of the B-sides were better than the actual single sometimes. I mean, that was the fun thing about it. You knew you were getting whatever single, but then to turn it on a B-side, you didn't know what it was going to be. It might be something crazy. It could be an unreleased track, maybe an acapella, whatever, but it was always something cool on the B-side.
What's it like being a rapper, like making music with Baby Bash, Paul Wall, like those are guys I grew up and I listen to now. So like, what's it like being in a room working with guys like that?
It's funny for me because, you know, I'm from Texas, you know, I was born and raised in Lubbock, Texas. And so I grew up on people like that, like Baby Bash, Chameleon Air, like all of these types of people were like people I really looked up to as a kid, because it's, in Texas, we just listen to music differently. You know, I was listening to Lil Flip over Jay-Z. Like that's just what it was. And so, you know, to be able to call them or see them somewhere. And even now, man, you know, I'm 34 years old now. This was back when I was like 15 years old. To even still now just be able to see him out and have him recognize me or say hi or whatever or comment on an Instagram post, it's still just a crazy feeling to me. I don't know if I'll get used to it. I just, you know, it's someone you look up to and you develop this relationship. It's pretty cool, man. It still kind of trips me out.
I think Baby Bash is incredibly underrated for the amount of songs he made from like 2002 to like 2010. Dude, like, everybody talks about all the other artists of that era, but I think he gets incredibly overlooked.
I mean, he's a great songwriter, too. You know, I think it's tough just being, at that time, I feel like it was tough being a Latin artist. You know, obviously now it's different. You have artists like Bad Bunny and J Balvin with 100% Spanish-speaking record in full rotation on mainstream stations. It's an awesome thing, but you know, back then it was so tough for Latin rappers to even get that mainstream look. And I mean, Bash was one of the few that did it. You know, he had Cyclone with T-Pain and Sugar Sugar with Frankie J and What Is It with Sean Kingston. I mean, he had a ton of hits, and I definitely agree with you. He's one of the overlooked artists for sure. He had a ton of hits, man.
Who are some of the current rappers that you're into? For me, I'm into Jack Harlow, DaBaby, Lil Durk. That's some of the new rap I'm into. I'm not into all of it. I like Moneybagg Yo, but for you, do you find yourself listening to more throwbacks or do you like some of the new music?
I mean, I have a respect for all of it. You know what I'm saying? My thing is so weird, man. Like people always freak out. Like, you know, when I'm at the gym, I just love R&B music, man. Like R&B music has just always for some reason been my thing. And so like, even now if I'm in the car, like literally yesterday I was in the car listening to Throwback Aaliyah. Yeah. For like 30 minutes. I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about. Like, how do you escape? That's a way for me to escape too. If I can put on some smooth music and something that just kind of takes me back to when I wasn't really thinking about, you know, syndication and a company and all these type of things, it kind of takes me back to just, you know, an easier, I guess, place. And so R&B's always just kind of been kind of like my sweet spot.
My go-to song whenever I need to jam out in the car, it's really bizarre because it's just me in the car by myself, would be On the Hotline by Pretty Ricky. Bro, that song will all... it's weird to listen to going down the highway by yourself, but On the Hotline will always put me in a good mood. Always.
That's a classic.
All that Pretty Ricky. And then what's weird is like they released a song called Puddles in like 2015, yeah. And I'm obsessed with it because it never caught on, but it might be the most vulgar song they've made. It's just them being raunchy.
Well, you know what's funny? When that song, I remember that song coming out, and I remember thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, damn, these guys are back. Like, this song's going to work. And then for whatever reason, it didn't catch on, but that song was a great song.
Who are some rappers you think from like 20 years ago, 10 years ago, you were surprised they caught on then, but they didn't really catch on in the long run? Who are some that you think you thought were going to be bigger?
Damn, that's a good question. I mean, on a Texas side of things, I would say, honestly, Chameleon Air. Like, not to just go back to that, but he was always one of my favorites, still one of my favorites. And what I liked the most about him was the fact that he had a very non-Texas sound, if that makes any sense. Like, in Texas, it's always very slower and a lot more simplistic. That way, it was just easier to catch on to. And Chameleon Air always would switch his rhyme pattern or do a very, like, a much more complex type of verse. And that was what I always just thought was really cool about him. And once he started really blowing up, I was like, man, like, there's no stopping him. And then I don't know if it's because he got into the tech world and kind of just let it go, or maybe, you know, just the times were kind of shifting. I'm not sure what it was, but I really thought he would have a longer, you know, musical run. I've been a fan. I'm still a fan of him.
I thought Young Jock was going to be bigger. I was such a huge fan. Everybody liked It's Going Down. I don't know if you know the song Flip Flop. That's one of my favorite songs of all time. It was on his first album, and it's like nobody knows about it. It's got a really good beat.
What's crazy is Young Jock, that's funny you bring him up. He had, you know, he had a few hits. Even like the songs that weren't on the radio, he had like, what was the other one? Patron or yeah. whatever. And that was a sample of Going Down, but then they made it into another song. He had such a chill, like laid back flow, but it was so relatable. The beat selection was great. That's a great artist. I mean, even, you know, you think of T-Pain.
Yes.
T-Pain, in my opinion, is one of the best artists of all time. And people look at me crazy when I say that. But he's so original. He's so dope. He's so different. He's got a different vision. I don't know how T-Pain still doesn't have 2 hits a year. I don't get it.
You know who I find depressing in a way is Lil Wayne. Because for me, I think he's, out of any artist on my Spotify, he's the artist I have the most songs saved in my favorite list. But his last 2 CDs, bro, I mean, Glory might be the only good song that he's made. And to me, that was because Big Sean was good. But I don't know, like, I don't know what happened to Lil Wayne. And I've seen him like 4 times when he's come to Tampa and he shows up like 80 minutes late and then does 40 minutes of singing. I don't know what happened to Lil Wayne, but I feel like he doesn't get enough credit, even though he really fell off at the same time.
I mean, I feel like when you're an artist like that, I mean, you got to think, Wayne, that Carter 3 album was so big.
I know.
You know, I feel like when you hit a certain status or a certain level, it's almost like I don't know how you can surpass that. You know what I mean? No matter how hard you try, I don't know. Like, I don't want to say he had his moment, because I know you still hear him on, like, he was actually on the Jack Harlow What's Poppin' remix.
Yeah.
And he killed it. He sounded phenomenal. So I feel like it's just kind of, I feel like the people put such an expectation on the artist that it's almost hard for the artist to live up to it.
What I find fascinating, where do you think Jack's going to go? Because I love his social media. He did a good job on SNL. Some of the songs that aren't radio hits, like the song about his breakup, Sunday Night, I'll listen to on repeat at the gym. I'm a big fan of his social media presence. I'm just wondering, because he's so young, if he's going to fade out or if he's going to blow up. I'm fascinated by Jack Harlow.
I think that's the biggest question for any artist right now, you know? I mean, I think a lot of people felt like that about The Baby. You know, when The Baby first came out, and people still make the comparisons, or not comparisons, but they try and say that every song, well, I guess they're comparing. Yeah, they're trying to say that every song sounds the same, but that his flow never switches up. You know, he addressed that in the song. I don't know what the key, it's got to be like a mix of social media and music, because obviously he'll throw out random videos for songs he's done, for verses he's done. I'm talking about The Baby still. He'll just throw random stuff out there on his social media, and I feel like he's done a good job of utilizing both. His songs get on the radio. He's had a ton of features, and then he's able to also come off as just real and relatable on social media. So I feel like that's a big thing too. You want these fans to, and this applies to anything you're in, you want them to feel like you're accessible. And I feel like he does a great job of not only putting himself out there, but, you know, interacting with fans. And that's gotta be a big part of it.
My favorite social media artist who's on social media would have to be 50 Cent. Like, his troll game and everything he does, man. Like, a few weeks ago, Diddy's like hooking up with one of his exes, and he essentially said, good for him. Like, the way he just trolls everybody, man, I think 50 is the best of all time at that, for being on IG.
Well, and he's just so calm and collective about it.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes, it's just this energy that he has. He knows exactly how to do it. Like, he knows how to be, you know, a smart ass, but at the same time, you know, serious. It's like, I don't want to mess with him. Like, it's funny. Like, there's no way I would talk bad about him ever because he might make fun of it, but he also might kill me. But that's kind of what I think everybody loves about 50.
So what do you have going on for the rest of the year through this decade with your radio show?
Oh my goodness, man. We got so much going on, you know? Like I said, the Complex thing, which is really cool. I mean, that's outside of radio, but that's just something I was really excited to partner with. You know, they're one of the biggest media companies in the world, so to have a relationship with them now and to be able to, you know, take their audience and bring them into our world and vice versa, I think that's a beautiful thing. As far as the show goes, you know, originally we started by syndicating it strictly for nights, and then the show would perform so well, the stations would move it to afternoon. And now we're at a point where a lot of the stations we're on are trying to move it to mornings. And so I think the evolution, I mean, even though we're doing afternoons in Phoenix now and that's our home base, I do think the evolution is going to be, you know, a big morning show. I just not too sure on when or how or where, but I think that's kind of the road we're on now, is to kind of figure that out. And then, I mean, end all be all, you know, I want to be in LA. I mean, I want to be doing mornings in Los Angeles. I want to turn the radio show, you know, into a TV show. And that's kind of where my goals are at the moment.
How do you think radio is doing, growing talent? Because you're a young up and comer, but you've also been doing it for so many years and you're very respected, but at times I feel like they don't do enough to grow talent. How do you think the business is doing with that?
I think it's both. You know, I think that one, I agree with you. I don't think the industry is doing a good job of grooming talent, but I also question the younger talent and what their actual goals are. You know, I mean, I think some people just get into it and they just want to get that look locally. Like they can go to the bar and get some free drinks and cool. Or, you know, they get the free whatever from local clothing store or whatever. I don't know if the younger, you know, jocks coming into this see the bigger picture and what it could be. I think just because we're in a streaming world, you know, I was in a meeting yesterday and one of the guys said that his 18-year-old daughter, I guess, was talking to her friends. And they're like, what did your dad do? And she's like, oh, he, the VP of radio, da da da. And they're like, radio, that's still around? Like, they didn't even know. And so I almost wonder, depending on the age, like, let's say you're 23 years old in radio, do you really even care about it? Or is it just kind of like, are you treating it like you're working at the Gap? You know?
Here's how I view it. So I'm an on-air talent at 102.5 The Bone. I don't have my own show, but I do well doing my podcast online, and I'm going to start doing a video show. And I also, you've influenced me seeing what you're doing to do just more things online. And I think radio is going to always be around, but I heard Howard say it best on a show from a few weeks ago. I was listening. He said to anybody that's getting into radio, he said to get on air and get your voice out there as much as possible, and then hopefully your podcast can take off. So I think that's the key, is don't expect to get rich from radio or famous from radio, but hopefully getting on the radio will give you clout that you can grow your brand online. That's kind of how I've been viewing it lately, because I've been in it for
What company are you with?
I work for Cox Media Group in Tampa. I work at 102.5 The Bone. It's talk radio.
Right. So yeah, I worked with Cox in San Antonio. I mean, this was years ago, but they were phenomenal people. I can't say, I wanted to make sure, because I don't want to say another company and make it seem weird, but I was talking to this radio company maybe 2 weeks ago. We're in a really fortunate situation as to where my radio show is actually like a business as well. So we don't work for any company. We work for Tino Gochino Radio LLC, and we have a partnership with our syndication company. And so it's a beautiful, beautiful, unique situation. But the cool thing is we're partnered with pretty much every broadcaster in the country. I mean, maybe one or two that haven't jumped on board yet, but we'll get there. But my point is, one of the companies I was talking to one of the main like head guys at program, and he told me, hey, we really understand what it is, and we need to get on board and get younger people interested and wanting to be part of radio. If you know of anybody, if you know anyone that wants to get into programming, if you know anybody that wants to maybe start out at nights or whatever, we're looking to groom new talent. So it does excite me to hear that there are companies that don't want to just sit and, you know, deal with, you know, 90-year-old people still doing the afternoon show or whatever. Like they want to grow new talent, and they want to, you know, they're open to it. So I think that's a beautiful thing. It's just about, you know, the current people being, you know, humble enough to not step to the side, but to open the door for somebody else. You know, a lot of people don't want to do that.
What's the key to getting noticed if you're going to reach out to a VP or whatnot? Because you got to imagine all the DMs and tweets and emails they're getting. So if you want to like shoot your shot with that's a weird way to say it, but with like a VP or a program director or a consultant, what's a way to get noticed?
I mean, you've got to have, we're at a point now, you've got to have some type of numbers. You've got to have social numbers. I mean, you got a guy in LA that just got hired because he's big on TikTok. You know what I mean? Like, you've got to have some type of numbers in something. Podcast numbers, Instagram numbers, Facebook numbers, TikTok numbers, whatever it is, but you've got to show where to point out. And I feel like it's almost like the music industry. These labels will get behind you once you have a song that's already almost popping, but you had to get it popping yourself first. So you've got to get yourself popping. You've got to show that you have an influence. You've got to show that people care about what you say. for the most part, unless, you know, maybe you know somebody. It always works like that too. Maybe you know somebody and that somebody knows that you're hardworking and driven and you've got what it takes and you just need a shot. So I feel like those are your best two options. You either A, have to have numbers, or B, be extremely passionate and know somebody that could help get you in.
So where can people find everything you're up to?
I mean, you know, like I said, our biggest platform without a doubt is Instagram. We got our podcast links on there. We do video versions and audio versions for both. The things we talk about on the air, we promote everything via Instagram. I mean, we're at so many different time slots. We don't, it's tough to have a 1-800 number to have people call in when it's mornings in one city and then it's nights in another. So literally we drive people to our Instagram. We'll set up the topic, and then their way to get on is by sending us voice message DMs, or you can just comment and we'll read them. But a lot of people have really adapted to the voice message feature. And so now they'll listen to it, send it to us. We air them, then give our opinions. And then even if it makes sense and they're super into it, we'll give them a call back and put them on. So everything for us, whether it's podcast, whether it's Complex, whether it's radio show, Instagram at Tino Cochino Radio.
Well, dude, keep up the good work. I like what you do. And I see that very, very soon you will have your own show in Los Angeles.
That is the goal, brother. That is the goal. From your mouth to God's ears, man.
Awesome. Keep up the good work, bro.
All